Chapter 13. Jesse stood in the living room of Ken Isley's condominium, listening to the silence. Jesse liked to go alone to places where victims lived and visit for a while. Rarely did the silence whisper to him anything worth hearing, but that didn't mean it wouldn't. Being there helped him think. The condo was a mirror image of the one where Angie Ahrens lived. On the living room floor near the gas fireplace was a big plaid dog cushion. On the low oak coffee table was a bottle of single malt scotch and two short, thick glasses. Above the fireplace was a 4-inch thin, wall-mounted television set that Jesse knew cost about $7,000. On an end table was a baseball enclosed in a plastic case. The ball had been signed almost illegibly by Willie Mays. To the right of the fireplace was a small maroon and gold replica model of an Indian motorcycle. In the kitchen was a set of stainless steel dog dishes and a black metal rack. There was a king-size walnut sleigh bed and a large screen television in the bedroom. On the bedside table were two copies of a magazine about men's health and exercise. In the bathroom, there was a wooden container of shaving soap, a brush, and double-edged razor. The razor and the shaving brush each had an ivory handle. A bottle of bay rum stood on the shaving ledge beside them. Everything was obviously new. The fact that the marketing director at Alibi, Christine Erickson, didn't prove much, Jesse thought. There were probably two people involved in the shooting, and each could be the other's alibi. But why? Jesse could find no reason for either of them to kill Isley. According to Peter Perkins, Isley was medium successful. He hadn't made anyone rich, including himself, but he hadn't put anyone in debtor's prison either. He stayed about even with the down market. Maybe he should go in and talk to people himself. Perkins was pretty good, but like most of the department, he didn't have much experience with homicide investigations. In the den, Jesse found another television and a big sound system. There was a gumball machine, a model of the original Thunderbird, a big illuminated globe, and some sort of glass slab filled with water through which bubbles rose endlessly. The world according to Sharper Image. There were no photographs. There were no books. Jesse went to Isley's front porch and checked the mailbox. It was a J. Crew catalog. Peter Perkins had the checkbook, bills, credit card receipts kind of evidence. He was perfectly competent to evaluate it. What interested Jesse was the emptiness, except for the dog cushion. There was no hint that anyone lived here and enjoyed it. It was monastically neat. If their timeline was right, Isley had come home from work, put on his sweats, and gone out for a run with the dog. But there were no clothes draped on a chair or across his bed. Whatever he had worn, he had carefully hung up or put in the laundry bag. His shoes were lined up on the shoe rack in his bedroom closet. The refrigerator was nearly empty. The CD player seemed ornamental. Jesse smiled in the dead silent house. Not even a picture of Ozzie Smith, he thought. Jesse moved slowly from room to room again. He didn't open any drawers or closets. He didn't pick up any artifacts. He simply moved slowly through the house. He saw nothing, smelled nothing, heard nothing, felt nothing that would even hint at why someone had wanted to put two bullets into Kenneth Isley's chest. The kitchen wall beside the back door had a doggy door cut into it that led to a fenced run in the backyard. Maybe I should get a dog, he thought. Jesse had no yard. What would the dog do all day? He sat for a few more moments, then stood and left the empty condo and locked the door behind him.